Okay.
And so I did that a lot, and I'm always asking people questions.
Right.
Like, obviously, we just sat here, and I just asked you about the comic book, and...
And then it turned into this whole thing that led us...
And now we're talking about Norman Lear, so...
Exactly. Who I'm going to look up immediately after we're done talking, because I need to know more about that man's life.
Yes, so...
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the new episode of Character Progression. Today, we're talking to my friend Veronica, and what character are you going to be telling us about?
I'm going to be talking about Janie Crawford. She's a... main character from Zora Neale Hurston's book, Your Eyes Were Watching God. And it is literally my favorite book. I think I've read it, and now at this point, probably like 9 times. Her character is one that is representative of women during that time, which probably about dates back maybe like around the 1920s. And is based out of Edenville. Zora Neale Hurston is a native of Florida. She was born in Edenville. And so a lot of the stories that she has written involves those people during that time, very prominent people. And she tends to write, she used to write about people who were historical people in that city.
And how do you discover the book?
I discovered this book when I was a junior in high school. I was in an honors English class, and during the summer we were assigned different topics to write about. We were going to do our research on. So the topic that I chose was on women.
Okay.
And I had to read 3 different books, and like Antonia was one, and this one, Their Eyes Were Watching God, was one of the books that I had to read, and I was instantly hooked. I had never read anything like that, and seeing a character evolve like she did and have such a tumultuous story to get to where she was in the end. So that's how I discovered that book, and it's been a part of my life ever since.
Nice. So kind of to summarize it a little bit, like, who is she?
Well, Janie Crawford is, at the beginning of the story, she's like around the age of 16. So she's a teenager who lives with her grandmother. She does not know who her mother is. She is more than likely born of either a rape, we don't really know, because it's confusing on how her grandmother tells the story. So we don't know if someone raped her or if this was someone that she had an affair with. But we do know that her father is white and her mother is black.
Okay.
As well as her mother was also biracial as well.
Which was a big deal, like, back in that time.
Oh, huge deal back in that time. You're talking about maybe like the late 1800s, right after slavery. So when we're introduced to her character, she is on this quest of discovering what love is. She realizes in a moment when she's looking at a tree being pollinated by a bee that she wants something close to that. And she knows that there's something happening inside her that is longing for her to be in a relationship. And so her first sight is on this young boy, and her grandmother takes notice. And in that moment, her grandmother basically discloses the plan that she has for her life. And she has struck this deal with this old man Killix, who has all this acres of land and a farm, and they have discussed her. And basically she has promised him her granddaughter. So she marries her off to this very old man.
Oh, wow.
Yes, wow indeed.
And is that just in exchange for more, like, power for the family, or
she does this because she wants her granddaughter to have a better life.
Okay.
Right? But unfortunately, you know, she's being married into a situation that she doesn't want to be in. What young child wants to be married to some very old man? No one, right?
Maybe Anna Nicole, that's it.
Exactly. She had other ideas.
Yeah.
But the character in this book doesn't want that, you know. She she doesn't even really know if she wants the young boy that she sees at the very beginning of the story, but she knows that she wants something that's true. Okay. And she wants to fall in love with someone. And her grandmother basically tells her, famous line is that the woman is the mule of the world. You know, the woman doesn't get to pick where they end up. They just end up where they end up. And she doesn't want her to go through this same life that she experienced or that her mother had gone through. She wants her to be set, right?
Yeah.
But sometimes being set means you being willing to take whatever is thrown at you. And being the mule of the world, that means that the man can do whatever they want to you. So she basically sails her off to this man. And he treats her like a queen for like an entire year. And she comes to her grandmother and she's basically just sitting there. She's like asking her, you told me that eventually I was going to fall in love with this man. Why hasn't it happened yet? And, you know, she goes back into her spiel of like, you know, I just want the best for you. So don't you understand where you are? Like,
so essentially, like, grandmother basically traded her happiness for opportunity.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So she realizes that, okay, that this life that my grandmother has tried to sell me is not where I want to be, and has now decided that she wants more for herself, but she doesn't quite know how she's going to get it. Until one day, a man walking into town, she sees him when she's supposed to be chopping wood for her husband, who has demanded that she's chopping this wood, and he's going away. He ends up going like to Claremont, I think.
Okay.
So, you know, no cars. It's going to take a while for him to get to Claremont from Eatonville.
Yeah, that's not a short drive now.
I'm not Eatonville, but I think like the Central Florida area.
Right.
And so she sees this man walking in this suit, and she's like, who is that and where is he going? And so she basically introduces herself to him, and he tells her that he is Joe Starks, and he's coming from Georgia. And he heard about this city that ain't nothing but black folks called Eatonville. And if she wanted to go, he would meet her back in the same spot the next day. And they would ride out and he would marry her and make her a proper woman. And so she goes home and she tries to figure out what she wants. And after a discussion with her husband, she realizes that she doesn't want to do this anymore. And so the next day, she meets up with Joe, and they're off to Eatonville. So they get to Eatonville, and he has these huge plans for this city. He wants to be the mayor. That's his ultimate goal, to be the mayor of this town. And so when he gets there, all he sees is just like black folks sitting around and not really doing much. You know, they're just sitting there, not really taking the land for what it is and building it up. So he decides that that's what he's going to do. And he deems himself mayor. And the way that he does this is that he goes and he buys up 200 acres and adds it to the land that is Eatonville. And so for the city people, they realize like, okay, this man has just come into town and is starting to make a name for himself. I think that we probably should go ahead and like make him mayor. With him wanting this power and the money and all that comes with that title, he thinks that his wife should now be a very proper lady, that she should not just be in these, you know, regular clothes, that she should have these beautiful pieces of garment. He buys her these dresses, these really expensive dresses that are very constricting, you know, the corsets and everything. And at first she likes it.
Mm-hmm.
But then she realizes that, you know, some of the townspeople, either they like her or they don't like her, but she can't really have that relationship that she desires with these people because now she's the mayor's wife.
And she's kind of putting on these airs of this proper woman instead of, I assume, I haven't read the book, mm-hmm. but I assume that she kind of felt like going and being with this man who became mayor was kind of this opportunity for her to really be herself and find herself, and now she is filling a role instead of being a person.
Exactly. Like she essentially thought that she was going to allow herself to do whatever she wanted, you know, that she would finally be with someone who would love her for her and let her basically have those wings to fly, but he is steadily trying to clip them. And so throughout their love story, because she does, you know, love him in the very beginning, she tries really hard to really love him. But she realizes that it's getting more and more difficult because, you know, she has this really long hair.
Okay.
And so now he wants her to pin her hair up because he's noticing that all the men folk in town are looking at her. And so he makes her wear these dresses that cover up to her neck and cover her arms. So she's like constantly covered. Her hair is up so no one can really grasp the beauty of her. But she's gorgeous. So you can't, no matter what you put her in, people still see who she is.
Yeah.
But it's a sign to those folks that this woman is my property. You cannot touch her. And so he creates a store. There's a general store. And she's basically told, this is where you will be. You're going to help run the store while I go out and run the town. And that is not her want. She doesn't want to be, you know, end up in the store. But that's what she ends up doing. And so as time goes on throughout the story, they are getting to a point where they're having more and more arguments. And he hits her. And the first time he hits her, there's a part in the story where she says she feels like something fell off the shelf inside of her. And she realizes that all she's ever wanted was to be in a relationship with a man where she can tell them everything that was on her mind and her heart. And she has not been able to do that with him because he's been shutting her down. Every time she tries to express a thought, he'll knock it away.
He's forcing her to be what he wants and needs her to be.
Right.
Not giving her the freedom.
Right, right. So he hits her and then she realizes, well, you know, this relationship isn't what I thought it was, and so I have to treat it differently. And so I no longer will sleep in the same bed with this person unless I'm extremely sleepy. You know, so she has taken to going into a whole nother room and, you know, living her life that way. And as time progresses on, they have another altercation where he really hits her. She moves away across the street to stay in her best friend's house. And she's living her life over there, and then he falls ill, and she comes and she takes care of him, and she takes care of him until he dies. And so now she's like, okay, I'm free of this person, and she's still running the general store, you know, because she still has that responsibility that she's holding on to. And then a young man named Tea Cake comes in town. So he's probably about maybe 10 years younger than her. She's in like probably hitting 40 at this point. And he comes in town. And in the beginning, at first, she was, you know, dressed in like mourner's clothing. And then she realizes, like, I got to let this go. And she starts, you know, wearing pretty dresses. And she's playing checkers and drinking soda with him on the porch. Okay. And people are obviously talking about it because it's, you know, they thinking like, oh, Joe hasn't been dead that long and now you're already seeking out somebody else. So throughout the entire story, you have this chorus of the people of Eatonville commenting on her and her relationships. And you as the reader obviously know exactly what is going on in her heart and her mind of what it is that she's looking for. And she really doesn't know if Tea Cake is who he's putting himself up to be, because he's telling her that he likes her, right? But should she trust that because all the other people in the past have told her the same thing? And, you know, it never ended well. And so he's been trying to convince her, like, let's leave, let's go on a trip, right? And first she's like, no, I don't want to go. And then eventually she's like, okay, let's do this. And people are telling her, I don't think this would be a good idea if you go on this trip. You know, so-and-so went on a trip like this, and next thing you know, she's coming back and she's broke. She has no money. So she's basically like, I'm going to live my best life. I'm going to go on this trip with this guy. And so they leave. And they end up at this, like, hotel slash joint. They go out and they party and having a good time. And the next day she wakes up and realizes that he is gone. And not only is he gone, so is her money. So she's stressing out. She's just like, I can't believe I've let myself do this. You know, just like everyone in the town said, I've now, you know, lost my self-dignity because this man has now left me in here. And I have no way to pay for a way to get home or anything. He took my money. He eventually comes back and he explains to her. He's like, you know, I'm good at gambling. I felt hot. I was in the middle of this game, winning so much money, and then the game turned bad, and then he reveals that, like, he has gotten stabbed, and so now she's like, oh, I'm so sorry that you're hurt, and so she's trying to mend it, and she makes this conscious decision of, like, okay, I'm going to stick this relationship out, even though I know that he took my money,
yeah,
right, and left me in this place all alone. What else is there? I want to see where this goes. And so they decide that they're going to go down South Florida and work the land down in the Everglades. So they make their way to Everglades and they're out there farming and doing whatever. And a hurricane comes because they're thinking, oh, it's just a storm and the weather's turning bad. And there's Native Americans telling them, hey, we got to go. The animals are making their way. It's just not safe anymore. Something's getting ready to happen. A hurricane is coming. And so he's thinking, oh, it's nothing but a storm. We'll be all right. So what happens? Hurricane comes. And in the midst of the hurricane, they kind of get caught up in this flood. And there's this dog there in the water. And it bites him. So after the storm, what happens is that they're getting themselves back together. And she realizes that her tea cake, her sweet tea cake, has rabies. And he's getting more aggressive, to the point where she has to make a decision because he's trying to kill her. And she's like, either it's his life or it's mine. Spoiler alert, she shoots him. She shoots him, he dies. And so now she has to make her way back to Edenville. And the story starts with her coming home. And she's in nothing but overalls and walking into town. And obviously everyone's looking around and they're like, what's going on? She did exactly what we told her not to do, and now look at her. She ain't got nothing. And she's having this conversation with her best friend. And it's a recount of her story. So we learn her story somehow with her talking to her friend about, like, the loves of her life and how she ended up where she did. And her getting to a place where she realized that it took her to get to a place of not having anything and really loving somebody, not for what they had, not for who they were, but just who they are in the heart. And if she was willing to take that on, despite him, like, taking her money and going to gambling and trusting this person.
And then losing him, both kind of emotionally with him getting more aggressive and physically with her having to kill him.
Right, right. So it's one of those stories of, like, what would you do for love? What would you endure for love? And her evolution of that, I think, is one of the major parts that stuck with me. Every time I read this story, it's like, I understand it more and more of what you would be willing to put up with because you're trying to find something. So Zora Neale Hurston is an amazing writer to be able to talk about a subject so heavy. And there's a lot of humor because she also was, you know, she did folklore. So there's humor and there's stories in there mixed in with hers. But Janie's character definitely talks about woman and what they are willing to take and what is placed upon them. The idea that they are the mule of the world and you have to take whatever a man is going to give you and whatever they're going to do to you. Because a lot of the characters in the story, the side characters, talk about how they have to beat their woman in order to maintain control. So she's talking about this subject throughout the entire book. And where Tea Cake does not ever want to get to a place where he is linked with all of those other people, where he does place his hands on her.
So despite being a gambler, he still has the most respect for her, like, as a person and as a woman.
Right. I mean, there are some instances where you're like, I think you still kind of have some trifling ways about you.
Okay.
But when you think about, of all the people, you take all the men that she has dealt with and you line them up, you know, like, he is probably, like, the best one for her at that point. But it also is her understanding who she is as a woman, being able to get to a place where she can voice herself, her thoughts, her wants, her needs, her desires, and not feel like someone is going to take those things for granted. And not caring what people think. I think she did an excellent, meaning Zora did an excellent thing in creating a character that wasn't wrapped up in what the town people thought. She still did her own thing, no matter what happened to her husbands or whatever. She did what she wanted to do. And I applaud her on that, on making her such a strong character that you can see just, like, get a full sense of self at the end of the story.
Even when acting as the mule, she still maintains her sense of self.
Right, because when he hits her the second time, even when he hits her the first time, she realizes, oh, no. Like, this love that I thought I had for you has now ended. And the affection that you probably would try to think that you could still get from me is now ended. And so I'm just going to put you where in your place. You stay there, I stay here, and that's how we'll work with each other. And then the second time she was like, okay, you're going to do this again? Then I'm out.
Yeah.
So she still was able to set some sort of boundaries to the best of her ability at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And deciding of when she wanted to walk away. But also the fact that she came back to him when he was sick showed a sense of, like, I'm willing to take care of you to show you that I am not like you. And you, even though you dog me out and you hit me, you on your deathbed is not a place where I wanted to see you, because, you know, I think she had an idea of, I thought this relationship would be different. And I knew, I saw greatness in you when I met you. And unfortunately, it didn't always pan out like she wanted. But she was still willing to take care of him at a horrible time.
You hit a lot of the checks on this in that that story. So let me ask you this then. Kind of, in what ways has liking her and having read this story, how has that influenced your life?
It, in general, in relation to her search for love, I think that is the thing that hits home and hard for me, because not necessarily having someone say, okay, this is who you should love, but trying to find that love and picking the wrong people. And then you go in and you're like, oh, I think this person might be it. And then you realize, like, this idea that you created for this person of who they are, actually that ain't it.
Yeah, you fall in love more with the idea of the person than the person themselves.
Right. And then having to say, okay, I need to start over. And there's a point where, like, when he's making her wear certain things. Like, I've been in that situation where, you know, a guy that I dated was like, no, I don't like your hair like that. You need to change your hair. And then I'm going and I change it. And I know it hurts deep down inside that I have made that sacrifice to change for somebody. And I'm just trying to justify it as, you know, it's just hair and I want him to be happy. And then later on, after looking back at the relationship, realizing, like, this person didn't like who I was, period. He didn't like me at no point and wanted to constantly change everything about me. And that, I think, probably is where I connected to her character the most. And she endured that for, like, 7+ years. And I endured mine for 7 years. And so it was like, okay, what does it take to break down a person to get them to be where you want? And then that hope of wanting to find someone who may not necessarily be like TK, but someone that you can be able to be open and free with, and them be perfectly fine with whatever you choose to do and however you choose to do it. Yeah, so I think that's where I connect that character.
Okay, so someone who accepts you just for who you are.
Right, right.
I like that. That's really relatable. I think everyone has had those situations where either you think someone's going to be the one, or you start to like the idea of someone and realize that they're more interested in who they think you are mm-hmm. than who you are,
mm-hmm.
and even
mm-hmm.
trying to change you to fit their preconceived notions.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think that's what people do oftentimes in relationships, where they, you know, if you, especially if you're someone that you met on a dating app and you read through the profile and you're like, okay, they like this and they look like this, and then you go on these dates and you get in a relationship and you realize, oh, you aren't the person that you presented yourself to be.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're trying to present your best self, but there's no opportunity to show, like, these are the places where I have my flaws, and these flaws might be things that you aren't willing to deal with, that it's just like, no. And you have to unwrap that present, and sometimes you're hoping that present is a good one. But other times you're like, damn it, I got socks when I really wanted a Nintendo. So.
I like that. the whole goal of dating, trying to avoid the human equivalent of socks.
Yes.
Everybody wants to find their human Nintendo.
Yes, why not? That's like the best gift ever. Give me a Nintendo. It, better yet, give me an Atari.
I'm going to play so much Pac-Man.
Centipede for days. Yeah. So this is a story I think that everyone should read if they ever get an opportunity to sit down and want to experience like a bit of history of what Edenville was. She ties a lot of that into there, which I really like. And just having that idea of knowing that people have been on this search for love for a very, very long time. And I think Zora in herself wrote a part of herself into that book. I know that she was always on this search. So it's good to see how people process their life story through their writing.
Yeah.
It's very telling. So that is why Janie Crawford is my favorite character. I love her dearly.
Okay. So if you had the opportunity to speak to the character of Janie Crawford, like she walks in here right now, what do you say to her?
Oh my gosh. I would want to know what happened after she got home. Was she satisfied with her singleness? After, you know, enduring all of those men, especially the unfortunate loss of TK, you know, did she stay single? Did she find what she really wanted to find? Or what she found was herself and she was totally satisfied with that? I think those would be my questions for her.
That makes sense. And also, like, I'm just thinking now, like, did she stay in Eatonville knowing that the other people that live there just had all these notions of her, especially not knowing that her ex-husband hit her and not knowing the full story of her going on this trip and coming back with nothing?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It'll be interesting. That would be an interesting conversation to have of what happened. What was the aftermath with the townspeople? You know, what did they say? Did the story ever get out? You know, she really wasn't concerned. She didn't care. She didn't care to tell anyone the story, but she wanted to share it with her best friend because that's her best friend.
Right. But then at the same time, you know, does her best friend keep it quiet? Do parts of it eventually leak out? Yeah.
That would be a good question. Like, did she go tell your business? But it's established in the beginnings of the book as when she's walking into town and her best friend is on the porch talking to the other ladies, that it looked as if she wasn't the type to go and tell her best friend's business.
Okay.
But she was willing to go find it out for herself.
Right.
So she goes over, she brings her food because she's like, my best friend's home. Let me go see about her. But she's not one to discuss it with the women that are there.
I'd also be really curious, from the way you described it, it doesn't sound like the book continues to deal with the character, but I'd be curious to know also, like, kind of what her grandmother thinks of what eventually happens to her.
Her grandmother dies.
Okay.
So her grandmother, after that discussion of her, after a year of being married, and her going and saying, you know, like, why am I not in love with this man?
Mm-hmm.
And then she leaves and goes back home. Her grandmother basically has this prayer that she gives to God and wanting her to understand why she did what she did. And then she gets sick and then she dies.
Okay.
So it's really quick. Like, she's at maybe the first chapter and then that's it. We don't see her anymore because she's passed on. And she's not mentioned anymore after that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I thought that she was in more of the book than that.
No, that's where she is. She just basically brings her to her husband and leaves her there and says, this is what life is about. Deal with it. And then she dies. And that's it.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, and then last thing. If you were to run into someone who was just going through a hard time in their own lives, using kind of the lessons and the inspirations that you got from Janie, what kind of advice would you give them?
Life will forever and ever, like, deal us with hard things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we are able to make out of those hard things instantly, like, you know, like a duck in water. You know, it just rolls right off our back. We can navigate through. But sometimes it can hit us hard. And it can change us. But there is hope in knowing that no matter how hard it hits us, you still innately can make that decision in you to say, okay, how am I going to deal with it? Like, how am I choosing to see this moment? Because we can allow ourselves to fall so far into it that we're gone. But the hope is that you can pull yourself out of it and claw your way back up. You know, you have to make that decision. And that's usually all it takes. And it could take just every single day telling yourself, okay, open your eyes and get up and get out of bed. We can do this. Just that. You made it out of bed. That's like the best thing. That's the reward for the day. Because sometimes I have to do that to myself and remind myself, okay, all right, you're out of bed. Next mission, take a shower. Take a shower. Put on your clothes. If I can get out of the house and make it to work, the day is set for me.
I really like that, though. That's a really good message.
Mm, thank you. Yeah, I just... sometimes you just have to take everything... every little step, as small as it is, it's a big thing, because we can get to a point where we are not getting out of bed. And if you can't get out of bed, that's a place where you don't want to be. So if you can get to that point where you're like, okay, I have this whole next 24 hours that I can live, and if I do one thing, then that's good. I don't need to do a whole bunch of stuff to feel like I used my day correctly, that I got everything that I had on my list completed. You know, if you get one thing off that list, you're good. If you get half of that thing done on that list, you're still good.
Yeah.
Because we know that life is not those list of things. Life is not that job. Life is not any of that outer stuff. You know, we're just trying to get through to the end of it.
Okay.
Hopefully you make it out on top.
Yeah, and what's important is that you try.
Yeah.
All right, well, awesome. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me. This is fun.
All right, and if there's any other characters that you can think of and you want to come back for another episode, I'd be more than happy to have you.
Oh, okay. No doubt.
All
right. Probably the Babysitter's Club.
Oh, going way back.
Yes. I read every single one of those books.
Nice. Feel like listening to this, there's going to be a whole generation that just went like, oh, okay.
We can talk about the Babysitter's Club.
Okay.
I still have copies of most of my, you know, one of the things that I hated the most was that I gave away a lot of my books. I regret that.
Okay.
I should have kept them.
And that's what Amazon's for.
Yes, that's right. Go back and relive my my childhood.
But until then, thanks for listening, everybody. Bye. All right, and before we go, there were a couple other things you wanted to talk about involving this book and Zora Neale Hurston in particular.
Yes, for those who have interest in the story but aren't willing to read it, because we might not have some readers, but we have some TV lovers, I highly suggest looking up Their Eyes Were Watching God, the movie starring Halle Berry, produced by Oprah Winfrey. I found it on YouTube, so it's available there. And if you want to know more information on Zora, they host a festival every year, the last week of January, in the city of Edenville, the Zora Neale Hurston Festival. And this year, they have Alice Walker as their main speaker. So definitely check that out.
All right. And for anyone who doesn't know, who's Alice Walker?
She wrote Color Purple.
Okay.
Yeah, so definitely have to go see her. If you got the money, go see her.
All right, great. So yeah, anyone who has an interest, go check out both the movie and the festival. I know most of our readers are, or most of our listeners are localized to Orlando, so Eatonville's a close drive and has amazing food also.
Yes.
So definitely check it out.